Let's take a listen to their first song, and then we'll chat a little bit. Giselle Sinnott and husband Ben.
Maldigo del alto cielo, la piedra con su reflejo, maldigo los azules.
Thank you.
pronto será mi
That was incredible. That's the only word I can use to describe it. There was a moment there where you sounded like one. There's several moments, actually, where you sounded like one instrument rather than two, like three, including your voice, where it was just like, oh, my goodness, how did that happen? And the juxtaposition also between you two is great. Now, we've met Ben before, but let's we'll talk with Ben in a minute. But I want to be sure we get to know Giselle Zanot a bit. Tell me just first about the song you sang.
And yes, well, this song is called Maldigo del Alto Cielo. It was written by Violeta Parra, who is one of she was one of Chile's like most the most known composer and revolutionary. She was many things. This lady was absolutely amazing. She not only did music, but she also like exhibited her artwork in the Louvre, and she was absolutely amazing. She went into like indigenous communities in Chile, and she captured the essence of this music and allowed the world to know more about these cultures. And she also was the founder of this movement, Nueva Canción. And through her, a lot of the Latin American musicians started writing political issues as well.
Which was not a safe thing to
not
do.
Not at all. Not in the 70s, no. That's when the dictatorship started in Chile and Argentina and Uruguay, you know.
And while I'm not an expert at all, my memory of this time and understanding of it was there was severe punishment for speaking out and writing music.
You know, she worked along with Victor Jara, who was he was assassinated. He was assassinated, and right now it's very interesting that you mention it, because they are filing charges against the assassin who lives in Florida, and the family won. I don't know how many million dollars, but that's not significant. What's significant is that it was recognized that it was this was really, truly unfair. And it's something that happened to a lot of people who revolted against dictatorship. And it happens now still, you know.
Yeah, I'm really glad you shared that. Victor Jara suffered incredibly, and I'm sure he was tortured. And
yeah.
There are other people whose names are not as well known, who I'm sure suffered along with him. But to think, I don't know if it's justice, but at least that some additional recognition to him today is known. He's worth reading about if you don't know about him. I'll bet if you Google Chile and Victor in the same...
It will appear.
Yeah, it will appear right away.
He was a very influential person, yes.
Tell me a bit about yourself.
Oh, it's hard to talk about myself.
I don't like to... Somebody interviewed me a few weeks ago, and... I was thinking to myself, gosh, I hope when I ask people questions, they don't feel like I do, because I'm happy to talk about myself, but I think I'm the least interested person in the room. You guys met in New York, right?
We met in New York. Well, actually, let me tell you a little bit about my story. I was born in Mexicali, in the desert of Mexico. It borders California. And when I was little, I decided to become an opera singer. So I pursued that for many years, you know. I studied in Austria, and then I lived in New York for 8 years. And it's been a whole journey. And I've been very lucky because I've been exposed to different types of genres. But now when I met Ben, my husband, he introduced me into jazz. And that has opened a whole different world to me. And, you know, it's exciting, it's challenging, and it's also something that I am growing into. And I feel the importance of jazz in history, in our community, and I feel that it's a way of people to liberate themselves. It started like that, through this revolutionary process. And jazz is so important. And what we're working on right now is the fusion of jazz and integrating that into indigenous languages to give people, you know, voice. All these indigenous communities who are struggling, they need to be heard. So that's what we are working on right now.
And Ben, it's nice to have you back. And how did you two meet? What were the circumstances?
Oh, well, it was actually at a party. it's much less noble than Giselle's discourse might lead you to believe. And I do have some things I just want to tag on to how she represented herself. But I'll just briefly say that I walked into this party and she said, "Hey, can you help me bring up a big bowl of margarita mix?" And the rest was history. We did bring the margarita mix upstairs, but you know, that basically it was interesting because I was planning on moving to Pittsburgh at the time. I had been in New York for 5 years. My close mentor and the person who bequeathed the saxophone to me, named Fred Ho, he was a Guggenheim recipient and an important innovator of a Asian American jazz fusion that some amazing work combined martial arts, Chinese opera, and like really infectious jazz funk. And growing up in the sort of pretty much like the neoconservative 80s and 90s, I think it was interesting to see someone do such an innovative thing with that musical language that wasn't, it didn't feel like expensive music or cocktail music. It felt like something rooted in a community. And it was also very engaged with social justice. And I wanted to move to Pittsburgh to pursue a longstanding interest in community gardening and urban agriculture. And I had some friends here doing that work. And with my mentor's passing, or his eminent passing at the time, it felt like a good time to leave. So unfortunately, I had met Giselle and I said, "I'm sorry, but I'm moving to Pittsburgh to try to build this crazy multicultural music or multidisciplinary music arts commune thing." And she said, "Sign me up." And here we are.
We got margarita mix here.
Yeah, exactly. We got more than margarita mix. But I do want to mention that Giselle is, you know, she mentioned she's an opera singer. She's fluent in six languages, you know, Romance European languages. And one thing she's also, she didn't mention this about herself, which is crucial to understanding her cosmology. She's a Yaqui indigenous person. The Yaqui are a group from northern Mexico who actually were never conquered by the Spanish or the Aztecs before that. And they it wasn't until much later in the 20th century that the Mexican dictatorship Porfirio Diaz displaced them. And they still exist in large numbers, But anyway, the point is that Giselle didn't know her own people's language, so that kind of that lack and also that interest became a sort of engaged, politicized one, and it was one that we wanted to connect with, rethinking Mexican identity, but also rethinking North American identity, because I think as we face the obstacles of the 21st century with climate change, issues with agriculture and species extinction, there's a lot of amazing wisdom and life that these communities can give us. And as artists, we felt it was our duty to try to give that sonic form and expression. So that brings us to this program right now.
Yeah, you'll bring that to people in very powerful ways, I think, through music and performance, and some that are so subtle and maybe even will take a while to actually gestate and bear fruit, but it's a really great way to do it, and I'm glad you are doing it.
Oh,
and
thank you.
I'm glad you came to Pittsburgh.
Oh my God, I am so actually. It's been a very very interesting path. I feel Pittsburgh has. It's my home now. I feel it like a home.
I'm really glad
you
to
know,
hear you say that.
And in New York, I just couldn't have that sense of belonging, or living in a big city could be overwhelming after 8 years. You know, I really don't know how I was able to to be there for so long. And now I look back and I'm grateful I was given this opportunity to be here. Thank you, Ben, for like the great idea.
Well, one of the first positive experiences I had in Pittsburgh was working with Larry and the SLB folks and seeing what an amazing community institution with media and outreach and empowerment. And it was just like, wow, this is the spirit of what's happening here, and I want to be a part of it. So thank you, Larry, for paving this road for us, too.
Well,
it really was meaningful.
Thanks. I mean, Pittsburgh can be rough as a newcomer. Any city can.
Especially at the beginning, you know, when you don't know people or you're just barely starting to find your way to, like, make a living. That's, like, the rough part of it. But little by little, you know, you construct, you build relationships, and here we are.
That's terrific. Well, what would you like to do next?
Well, actually, I would like to do a song that is called Kola Valik. It's written in Tzotzil. It's a Mayan language. And, you know, to me, this is so important because when I go to Mexico and I visit museums, I see all these, exhibits of, ancient civilizations, and they try to picture it as if they are dead. And these are like thousands and thousands of indigenous people who are still alive. And they have a very rich culture. And through their language, they teach us a lot of things. I am barely starting to learn this language Tzotzil, and I came to find out that they don't have division of gender, for instance. They don't say he or she or it. They don't have division of subject either. They say hale'e for men and for women, because they believe that men and women are the same. We're part of the same, and they're not. They don't separate from nature either. So through their language, you are able to see like their cosmovision. And that's why for me it's so important to make music with these messages. For instance, this song was given to me by a friend of mine. His name is Natalio. And he's like, I don't even want you to say my name that I composed this song. I just want you to spread it out. And so the message is basically, Kula Valik means thank you. And it's giving thanks to the people who like gather in one heart and in one community. And it's telling people to withstand the struggle and to walk together for a good living. And it addresses young people and to take care of. He says we are the garden, the guardianes. How can I translate that? People who, yeah, of the future. Yeah. So that's what this song is all about. I need to get my cello ready.
That's fine. Just take a moment. while you're doing that, I was going to ask you about the sax. This was bequeathed to you by your mentor.
Yes. It's a 1967 Selmer baritone saxophone Mark VI. It has a low A on it, which is it lets me play in with that last song that we just did, the Violetta Parra song. He saved up money working at a laundromat, and then he went out to Boston and buy it, and it was his. He took great care of it. It was his only saxophone his entire career, and as he was passing away, I did a lot of shows with him, and he asked me to carry on the message, I guess, of the music and the saxophone. Interestingly enough, its serial number is 1977-88, which is our birthday years combined. So it seems like it was. It has some kind of symbolism in our own,
absolutely,
you know, our own work together. So,
what was his name again?
Fred Ho.
I was reading about him on your website. I'm sorry, I forgot his name, but I had never known about him, and I'm glad you have a few pictures with him there. I'm glad. I think you do.
Yes, and I need to update that website. So thanks for bringing that to my attention. Yeah, he was a great. I mean, he really was to me one of the most important jazz and musical figures of the, you know, last quarter of the 20th century.
H-O-G-H.
Just F-R. So Fred, and then space H-O. That's it.
Oh, just H-O.
Yeah, it used to be H-O-U-N, but people kept pronouncing it Hoon, so he just phoneticized it so it was easier.
Thanks. I just figured if anybody wants to look him up,
absolutely.
That's a way.
We're actually going to have at Red Rooster.
Yeah, we're doing a tribute concert to him in New York in August 13th. And we'll talk about our upcoming performances later. We also have some in Pittsburgh.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, let's take another listen. Here we go. Thank a you, language Mary. You've probably never heard before. Thank you. I've never heard anything like the two of you together. As you were singing, Giselle, I felt like Ben Sax, especially at the beginning, was pushing your words up to the heavens, that he literally was taking your music and sync with each other, but was like pushing. He was almost like your megaphone. I don't know if that makes any sense.
You just said it. You know, I can't describe it, but you just said it right.
I don't know if you saw me. I was starting to push with my hand.
You were jamming with us. You were definitely there.
I did it because I wanted to remember that feeling. It's like you were giving. Not that you needed a boost, but it's like you were pushing. It's just.
Pushing forward.
Yeah, I've never
to the universe.
I've just never heard anything.
Thank you so much. You're so sweet.
I live to serve. though actually, Giselle, when we first met, she helped me so much with my diaphragm. She helped. She copped all of her operatic training and applied it to my interior of my belly. Which is what she did for herself, and that's what you do. That's what gives her a singer or anyone their power. But she helped expand my move me outward and upward just with my technique.
Really?
Yeah, I was having a lot of trouble with the lower notes, and she really helped me with that. But I do feel like that's my mission in life, is to facilitate the amplification of these kinds of voices. Specifically Giselle's, but also more generally, like Giselle was referencing original peoples, marginalized peoples, people who have been not marginal to American history, but marginalized by American history, so to speak. And I feel like just meeting Giselle and seeing what a hard worker she is and what an amazing person she is says not only so much about her character, but also the character and strength of her people. And that's something that I've found myself very easily adept at being aligning myself with. It's like my life has a purpose beyond being a cool saxophone player, you know, which, you know, is a good identity path for many people. But for me, I felt like this was something that was I could actually sign up for.
Well, yeah. You were raised, and I think I'll take this too. Here in the United States, to kind of we became not only a melting pot, but a melting pot that is diluted as opposed to a quilt.
Uh-huh.
And so that's our true. Own sense of cultural identity, I think for many people, was sort of whittled away as growing up. I don't know if you felt that way.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah, the suburbs. I was trying to find some funny cultural reference, but
that's because perfect. That's where I grew up.
I can't think of one because, like you said, we don't have that fabric. You know, it's like the mall was where we hung out. That was our public space. Obviously, that's not true everywhere in America, but I think for a lot of people who are trying to figure out what to do with their lives, there's this lack of history. There's a lack of continuity, and it makes it difficult to connect with. You know, things that you see on the news, like, you know, whether that's, you know, killings of black people by police or we've passed another climate threshold, there's like a alienation from our surroundings. And we have to fight to reintegrate that, you know. And that's been my, like, path, I guess, in many ways. And, you know, thank you for, you know, bringing that forward because I think it's something that, you know, obviously – like how luck, you know, how like screw me on some level, like how lucky I am to like be growing up in so much privilege and to be able to renounce it. You know, it's like so hypocritical. But at the same time, just look at the, you know, depression rate and, you know, the suicide rate and, you know, things are not what they seem on the surface. Right. And that's also why I teach music to the kids over in David's Music House. These kids, some of them are brilliant, and they would never make it on the football team or the soccer team, and that's not what they're meant to be, you know? And if they would accept someone else's narrative, they would be a bad football player, you know what I mean? But actually, they're a brilliant musician, they're creative, they're irreducible, and, you know, music has saved my life, it saved our life, I think it can save the world, and that's partly why we teach it, we do it, we profess it, and we try to use it to make this world a more human place, I guess.
Living deliberatively, it's a wonderful thing, and people can start doing that when they choose. And it's wonderful to have you here. I want to be sure we get, I'm keeping an eye on the clock because I want to be sure we get lots of music in, too.
1147.
But we'll have time, and we'll have you back.
Thanks.
Are there any gigs coming up that we should talk about?
Well,
we have a show. If you're open to driving to Harmony, Pennsylvania,
that's not. We have one of our affiliates covers it, and that's not a far drive at all.
Amazing. Well, then this is we're playing. I guess we're headlining the Harmony Jazz Festival on Saturday, August 27th. Uh-huh. And that's at the Opera House at 7 p.m.
That's swell.
Yeah. And maybe it's online, maybe it's not, but we'll put it on our website as soon as I get home. Unfortunately, I'm playing with the Temptations tonight, which is exciting, but it means that I won't be able to update my website until I get home.
Do you have one of those little suits and do you have to spin around and stuff?
I'm not. You know what? They're putting us on a They're putting us on a balcony in the second level, so I don't think we're going to be visible to the crowd.
He's pretty calm for playing with the temps. That's a nice gig.
I know. I'm super nervous and excited. And Giselle, unfortunately, I can't join her today because of that, but she's playing at the Deutschtown Music Festival at 7 p.m.
No, at 5:30.
No. So at 7 p.m. At the Deutschtown Music Festival, Arnold's Tea House.
Yeah, on East Ohio.
On the north side here with a great band, Yo Mama's Samba, which is a Brazilian.
It's all Brazilian music.
Brazilian music with Brazilians and some Mexicans and some Americans, some North Americans. And then she's also playing at the Bayardstown Social Club before that, which is a fundraiser that's at 5:30 p.m. for the delegates of Bernie Sanders who are trying to raise money to go to the Democratic National Convention. They're working folks, they're regular folks, and they can't afford the $4,000 hotel fees. So she's playing at a fundraiser for them at 5:30. So that's Giselle's itinerary for today. And then we've got the Harmony PA Fest. And then on September 22nd, we're playing at the James Street Gastropub, and that's with our big, crazy, multi-cultural band, the Afro Yaki Music Collective. So we'll put all that on our websites. And you have one more thing to say, and then we'll play the last song.
Can you also mention our Red Rooster event in New York?
We are doing something in Harlem, if you want to make a six-hour trek here. We're doing a tribute to that departed friend of ours, Fred Ho, on August 13th, which is his birthday, and that will also feature Pittsburgh musicians and some New York musicians and these languages that you're hearing tonight and new combinations of instruments and music that will blow your mind and ears away. So,
Also, if you're interested in taking voice lessons, I am offering right now a free lesson if you're interested and try it out. If you want to get started in the summer, that will be a great idea.
That's a great thing. And, you know, if you have trouble, if you're driving right now, if you write to us, you already have our address, right? SLB at slbradio.org. We'll connect you with Ben and Giselle if you have trouble remembering them. Depending on length, I think Ben's right. We probably do have time for one more. It's jazz, after all.
Yeah.
Have to stretch out a little bit.
Too long.
If you were a bluegrass band, you could get four songs in between now and noon.
But we'll just play it really fast.
We do have to have you back.
Oh, thank you so much.
That would be sweet.
Yeah, what are you going to do?
No Nansin,
yeah. This is a song in Nahuatl, in the Aztec language. And it's a song for Mother Earth.
It's composed by a Mexican composer named Salvador Moreno, who's from a previous generation who was interested in similar themes of kind of recovering Mexico's indigenous identity and present. But also, we did a very interesting arrangement, well, I think an interesting arrangement of it that makes it probably not that recognizable to him at this point. So, without further ado, No Nansin.
Yes.
And actually, we'll do that.
Shit, then I didn't wake up. Sette domenici Tene di noiola Tene di nostra scitla Tene di neluica Tene di nanazi Cine te cachi, not la soții